on Friday, Teresa sent me a message saying, can you give me the information for the service so I can put it together? Oh, I didn't know I had a service leader. I already did it all. That's why it has my name up there saying service leader. But thank you, Teresa, for taking care of us today. Let's start out with a little exercise in imagination here. Imagine we've got an iceberg here. Here's our waterline. As we all know, most of an iceberg is not visible. So up here, above the waterline, this is an iceberg of racism now in our imaginations. So above the waterline is the overt, obvious racism, like the KKK and skinheads and the N-word and hate crimes. That kind of racism is easy to avoid, because if you want to participate in that kind of racism, you have to seek it out and make a choice. It's pretty easy for UUs to avoid that. The racism below the waterline is, in fact, there's more of it, but it's also, in some ways, more insidious, perhaps more dangerous, because it has some degree of social endorsement and acceptance, and many of us can do it without even being aware. This is where things like redistricting, so that we disfranchise people of color, racist mascots, the myth of pull yourself up by your bootstraps, all of those kinds of things would live, are racist things below the waterline. So today what I want to address is one part of this more covert racism, and that is everyday expressions that have racist roots and racist connotations. In the words of anti-apartheid activist Bishop Desmond Tutu, he said this quote, "Language is very powerful. Language does not just describe reality, language creates the reality it describes." So the kinds of expressions that we're going to explore today, they do advance racism when they're used. That's because they reify the racism, the stereotypes that they came from. And that's going to be true whether we're aware of it or not as a speaker. And if we or anyone hearing them makes excuses like, oh, lighten up, it's just an expression, or that's from another era, nobody understands that real meaning anymore, well, then we're just exacerbating the problem. So what I'm going to do is I've got a number of these expressions, and after I talk about each one, then I'm going to turn it over to you, and collectively we're going to come up with what could be some better alternatives so that we don't have to use that one anymore. Sometimes it'll be obvious what an alternative will be. Sometimes we might have to think about it a little bit. All right, so let's start with our first word or expression. And this one goes back quite far back in time, and it derives from Middle English, which is to gyp or be gypped. So it describes a feeling of being cheated. It's racist because it comes from the offensive word gypsy, and that's another word. You shouldn't use gypsy either. That's offensive. And it refers to the Romani people, and it's based on the idea or the supposed idea that that entire race of people is supposedly degenerate and criminal and out to cheat everyone who's not Romani. And the Romani people endured centuries of persecution in Europe. There were times and places where they were branded or had their ears severed to make them immediately recognizable. Their communities were subject to child abductions, forced labor, enslavement, ethnic cleansing. Multiple countries in Europe in the 1500s issued expulsion orders. Get out or we're going to kill you. In 1545, the Holy Roman Empire declared this, quote, "Whoever kills a gypsy will be guilty of no murder." The resulting killing spree was so atrocious that the government later added a caveat to that, saying, it's not okay to drown women and children. That was kind of them, wasn't it? More recently, like Jews, the Romani were considered enemies of the state by the Nazi regime, and they were also part of the 1938 extermination order. Half of the Romani in Europe were killed by Nazi genocide. So given that Gypt has always been racist, it seems we would be very wise and well to get rid of that word from our lexicon. And this one should be pretty easy to come up with alternatives for. So instead of Gypt, what could we say? Cheated? Swindled? Ripped off? Cheated? Right, there's all kinds of synonyms to convey a different and better meaning. All right, let's move to a different one. This one comes from the 19th century U.S. Long time no see. No can do. Chop chop. And there are probably others. What are they doing? They're mocking the English of, and it depends who you ask. Some people say it's mocking the English of indigenous peoples. Some people say it's mocking the English of Chinese immigrants. It could be both. The point is, it doesn't really matter. The expressions are making fun of the English of non-whites. Now, we know that chop chop was to make fun of Chinese immigrants, and it does, that sound does come from some words in Chinese. But when Euros were using it, white folks were using it, it was meant to connote and assert superiority. And if you think how we use chop chop, we mean it that way, right? It's not, you wouldn't use it to your spouse, right? Or only a fool would use it to your spouse, right? Chop chop. Chop chop is usually someone in power, right? Telling a subordinate. So that's where the connotation of it is coming from. It's something, chop chop is something that we say pretentiously. So no can do, long time no see, was either targeting Chinese immigrants or indigenous peoples. Whichever group, it's obviously mocked with racism, with xenophobia. And it's marking those peoples as outsiders. The way you speak your English makes you a cultural inferior. Now, there are a number of reasons we might use our English in the wrong way. Idioms and wordplay, that can be fun. And it can be even be a form of resistance to use language outside the norm. But in these cases, the unusual English was being used by the dominant group to make the other group seem uncultured, that the best they can do is mimic our superior ways. And if they are primitive and less cultured, then it means we can justify special labor or immigration laws. Or maybe we can take that land away because they're not using it properly anyway. So now that I know where these phrases come from, I intend to be very mindful in avoiding them. After all, we don't really need them. So long time no see, there's all kinds of different ways we could say that, right? I haven't seen you in a long time. How about just putting it in proper English instead of mocking English? No can do. That one's a pretty easy one, too, to reverse, right? I can't go for that. I won't do that. I can't do that, right? There's all sorts of ways. Chop, chop. Could you do it quick? I need that right away. But again, there are all kinds of ways we can put that better. The rest of the words I've got today come from a whole bundle of toxic language with its roots in the oppression of black people. Surprise, surprise, our language has lots of anti-black stuff as a legacy of slavery, but also a legacy of Jim Crow as ways to try and still assert white dominance and superiority after slavery. Eeny, meeny, miny, moe. Did you know that one was racist? I didn't. Yeah.
I remember.
It being used that way?
I'm sorry.
With it being used with the N-word in it, you mean?
That's what
oh, okay.
I was 6 or 7.
Oh, okay. Yeah, when I was growing up, I don't remember it having, including the N-word, I remember tiger being put in its place. That doesn't really make it all that much better. Now, the this little children's nursery rhyme predates slavery. It goes all the way back to the Middle Ages, apparently. But at some point, American slave owners put the N-word into the rhyme as a, maybe it was done literally or just playfully, I don't know, but, and we don't know. Perhaps people went to slave auctions and literally did eeny, meeny, using the N-word. Right, right. Yeah, and that's always been the intent of it. That's where it emerged in the Middle Ages. So I don't imagine any of us want to encourage anyone, let alone children, to recite something so ugly. Putting tiger in it doesn't really make it any better. Now, there is a very ancient version without the racist connotation, but in this culture, you can't use it without the racist connotations any longer. I think that that covered up any medieval roots. So what could we use if we want to do like a random decision maker? What's an alternative? Well, you could do that, right? You could just spin around and point. I wasn't familiar with this one until I saw it on Seinfeld years ago, but apparently this is sort of a random selection that is been around in the mid-Atlantic area for a long time. Inca dink, a bottle of ink, the cork fell out and you stink. Not because you're dirty, not because you're clean, just because you kissed a girl behind the magazine and you are it. There's also one potato, two potato, three potato, four, five potato, six potato, seven potato more. I don't know where the roots of that one are from, but yeah, that one, maybe I do need to take a closer look at that one. Uppity. Now, at first blush, you might say, well, that one doesn't seem so bad, because we need words to refer to someone being pretentious, right? Well, uppity is historically loaded because of when and how it was used. Psychologist and activist Thandiwe D. Watts-Jones wrote this about uppity. It's used to disparage a black person who does not know his or her place. Uppity is a term used by white people to refer to black people who have the audacity to think well of themselves, to assert unapologetically an opinion that may be outside a white person's comfort zone or thinking. And this is why uppity is objectionable, because it doesn't just mean pretentious. If it was just another word for pretentious, then our culture would be using it that way. But we don't use it that way. We use it selectively and racially. And this is why political opponents of both of the Obamas called them uppity. But I don't ever remember hearing any other president or their spouse being referred to as uppity. If it just meant pretentious, then any politician would be called uppity, right? If we only call the black ones uppity, then that means it's racist. So I've already been using one alternative, pretentious. What else could work? Arrogant.
Big shot.
Big shot. Elitist. Haughty. Again, there are a whole bundle of synonyms. They're not complimentary, granted, but at least they're not racist, right?
So I moved from Indianapolis to a small town in southern Indiana, and I don't speak the same way that people do in that town. I was constantly.
Oh, is that right? Oh, that's interesting. Oh, okay.
I was okay, so then I focused down on my language. I talk folksy when I'm a folksy people, and talk city when I'm a city people.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
I do use the word uppity, but I have rules about it. I don't use it towards black people or anyone who is brown, and I don't use it towards women.
Oh, okay.
It's only for
white guys?
It's only for uppity guys. Who are white, who are irritating me.
Well, see, then that's like... Well, that's sort of like when the oppressed group then embraces the word, like some black folks using the N-word, right, to reverse it and take the power out of it. I hadn't been aware of it getting other forms of usage or currency. But again, those people are, right, in Southern Indiana, are using it in a specific way, too, even if it's not in a racialized way. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So, yeah, so perhaps it has racist connotations, but also some strong classist ones, too. Here's one that caught me quite by surprise. Cakewalk, piece of cake. Now, I suppose any of us should have asked ourselves, what the hell does that mean? Because it doesn't make any sense. And we all know that it's racist. Why? A cakewalk was a form of a prize dance. So in the era of slavery, there were a variety of forms of prize dances where slave owners forced enslaved peoples to perform in a variety of ways, and then they'd get a prize. So it's coercive, obviously. A cakewalk was one particular kind of a prize where you got the cake, and they began as mockeries. So the enslaved person was forced to mimic the dance of the slave owner, and then everyone would they laugh at the slave owner. So it's kind of like the role of, say, jesters were in a king's court, right? You make fun of the king so that everybody can laugh. Over time, however, we're talking about over a span of decades, the wider society began to see these dances not as mockeries, but as demonstrations of black people's real skills and talents with dance. And it became a form of dance that whites then demanded. It eventually, post-slavery, transformed into minstrel shows and blackface, where white people then danced the dance that supposedly black people were capable of. So, all of that thread from a prize dance all the way up through minstrel shows and blackface, it's all about portraying black people as buffoons. They're clearly unworthy of an equal place in society because look at them, they can't even dance right. They're just clowns. Well, this is... The relationship between the black community and dance and white perceptions of that, right, has a whole nother loaded thing about it. But the cakewalk in particular, or piece of cake, is particularly problematic. Right? It's not just racist, it's racist and evoking the era of slavery. So what could we use instead?
Easy.
A breeze. Easy breezy, we can put them together. Easy peasy lemon squeezy. Mm-hmm. So this list that I gathered for us today is certainly not comprehensive. There are lots more problematic expressions, like peanut gallery, which is both classist and racist. Grandfathered in, that one's a little bit harder to find alternatives for because it became legal jargon, but grandfathered was how blacks were disfranchised post-slavery, where a number of states passed laws that you can vote if your grandfather could vote. You're grandfathered in. Well, guess whose grandfathers could vote? White people. Jew me. Or kike me, both of those have the same connotation as being gypped, only in this case being applied to Jews instead of to the Romani. To jimmy it?
Yeah.
I haven't encountered it, but it wouldn't surprise me. How about this one that we use all the time? I've begun correcting myself on this one several months back. Master bedrooms. Master bathrooms. Why can't it just be the main bedroom? Or the largest bedroom? Sold down the river. Yeah, sold down the river may be a little bit more old-fashioned, right? I don't know if it's in currency as much. Yeah, I'm not hip enough for any of that, yeah, teenage jargon. But yeah, some of this is much more perhaps my parents and grandparents' generation in terms of how frequently it was used, but I think most of us still hear them from time to time, or at least very well know of them and are aware of them. Certainly, when I was growing up, I heard a whole lot of Polack jokes growing up in Wisconsin. You don't hear them half as often as you did anymore, but Polack jokes, guess where those come from? The Nazis, who wanted to make Poles look like they were extra stupid and therefore it was okay to invade them. What else is problematic? Black bald, black marked, black sheep. It's a whole lot of words with black in them or comparable versions of it that are problematic. Well, you get the idea. There's a lot of it. Racist expressions are all over our language and can be hiding in some surprising places. And it's not that these are subjective, like, oh, well, you know, some of us might think it's racist, some of us might not. It's not debatable. These things all have racist histories and racist roots, and that's how they were used. So people like ourselves who want to be the best allies that we can be to marginalized people, however those groups may be marginalized, we should make an effort to increase our own awareness and to purge those expressions when we can and find better substitutes. So it's my wish that each of us may grow more aware of the power of language and the impact that each of us can make in using language in ways that will heal rather than continue to harm.